Welcome to the Agent of Wealth podcast with Mark Boutis from Boutis Financial. In this podcast, Mark helps guide you towards financial freedom, ensure you never run out of money, and create a balance in life that prioritizes what is most important to you. Join us for this journey as Mark draws from years of expertise and guest experts to solve the multiple wealth-building challenges involved in your financial life.
Welcome back to The Agent of Wealth. This is your host, Mark Boutis. On today's show, I'm joined by a special guest, John Hewitt. John's a franchising expert with over 50 years experience in the field and has helped over 5,000 people achieve their dreams of business ownership. He's also a serial entrepreneur who founded two major tax retail chains, Jackson Hewitt and Liberty Tax, that were sold for millions of dollars. John is currently the CEO of Loyalty Brands. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
So today we're going to talk about franchising, and I know, you know, it's a path to business ownership. Maybe we can start off with, how did you get started? What was your path? How did you get started into franchising?
Well, I was blessed when I was 20 years old. I was at a university at Buffalo and took an H&R Block course, and I loved it. And the biggest blessing was, at 20 years old, I found out what I wanted to do. So I've been in franchising since 1969. This is my 55th season.
Were you kind of, did the business and the franchising thoughts come into play at the same time? Like, did you say, okay, I want to be in the tax field and I want to be in the franchising field? Or did you kind of go into the tax field and then at some point franchising kind of fell into franchising?
First, I fell in love with being a tax preparer. And because, number one, it requires skills, adding, subtracting, multiplying skills. And I'm very good at that. Number two, it requires law and gray areas and making decisions which are best for the customer. And thirdly, it gives me a chance to help people. And one of my most fanatical commitments is to change people's lives and help people. So combined all those things. And then part of that was they were a franchise company. And so the franchisees were their lives were being changed dramatically. Through franchising, I've created 1,000 millionaires.
And at what point did you kind of, like, because, you know, you come across a lot of, let's say, tax preparers or even people in, like, any service industries, and they get into it, plus they like you, they like doing the specific business, but a lot of times they struggle in actually managing a business, growing a business, scaling a business. How were you able to not only, you know, perform the duties of a tax preparer, but also be able to say, all right, let's expand this, not just so I can manage my own business, but that I'm going to own multiple businesses?
Yeah, I think I have an innate leadership quality. And I've always been a leader since I was 4 years old in all the groups that I've been in. And so it started with leadership. And then part of great leadership is a commitment to improve. I've always been a consummate student. Even today at my age, I'm still learning. And so every great system has to be improving. There's no system that worked 20 years ago that's working as well as it is today. So that commitment to improvement and my God-given leadership skills.
How did you, like, you know, you mentioned systems, and I'm sure they're extremely important to being able to, especially in, like, the franchising world and being able to scale. How did you follow a model, like your first franchise? Did you follow a model? Did you have a mentor or a coach? How did you, or did you use a service, or how did you actually build this? Were you building them from the start when you started the business? How did you kind of go about building those systems?
I feel it was sort of a easy for me because I had this great company that was a Fortune 500 company called H&R Block that was very, very successful. And they just were committed to not improve. And so I'm 95 when I started Jackson Hewitt, 95, 96, 7, 8% of what I did was the same as they did. I just added tweaks that they were just too slow to envision. And so I was always years ahead of them in creating unique marketing philosophies that today are standard and became standard in the industry, but they just wouldn't, they just resisted them. They loved, this is they loved the phrase, this is the way we've always done it.
Which in changing times is probably not the best the best motto to have.
Exactly. And in fact, speaking of changing, when my dad and I developed the first tax software for an Apple computer in 1981, we went to see them in March of 82, and they were testing for free with Texas Instruments and IBM, because if either of them sold them software, then they were going to be a huge purchase, because this is a world without desktops. And they came out in their annual report and said, people ask us why we don't computerize. We say, why should we? We tried it. Doesn't save any money. Customers don't care. We're never going to computerize. So, yeah, I was just very blessed that we had this great system of serving customers and a huge Fortune 500 company that was just slow moving, like the Queen Mary. And we were like a motorboat riding around, buzzing around the Queen Mary.
I imagine, like most things, the first franchise was probably the hardest starting, like your first actual franchise. Was it a location close to you? Did you run it? What did that look like, kind of that process of saying, oh yeah, I got a good business. I think I've got the systems in place. I'm ready to, we can scale. I want to start a second location or a franchise. What did that actually look like?
Well, again, I made one of the dumbest mistakes I made when I started Jackson Hewitt. The second biggest mistake I made was not starting from franchising from day one. And we acquired 6 offices from Mel Jackson's widow. We changed the name to Jackson Hewitt. We grew to first year 11 offices, second year 15, third year 22. So that's pretty good growth, going from 6 to 22 in 3 years. But our goal, H&R Block, had 9,000. And our goal was to be bigger than H&R Block. And I realized I'd be like 500 years old by the time we got to 9,000 at that pace. And so we started franchising. So the biggest mistake was not franchising from day one and wasting 3 years. The best thing I did, though, when we decided to franchise is we had took those 22 offices and sold them to my employees. And so I have, not only did I have high quality franchisees, but they knew me and respected me and worked with me. So, and I even partnered, because 2 of them were too timid to do it on their own. I partnered with a couple of them. So I was my own franchise. So we had all great franchises that I'd worked with that together in the previous, most of them for the previous 3 years. So I started with great franchises.
And I guess at some point, does it get to, okay, these are too many franchises for you to manage as being the owner of the franchise? Or were you kind of just looking at an expansion path and we're just going to build as many, you know, we're going to start as many of these franchises as possible?
Because it's a system and every office has the same system, whether it's here in Virginia Beach or in Alaska or in Hawaii or in California or Florida, every office has the same system. So replicating it comes naturally. It's so from a national vantage point, from a headquarters vantage point, it wasn't hard to scale. It was hard to scale in each individual franchise. What I learned, Mark, is that a lot of people, the biggest disease in American management is the inability to delegate. And it doesn't really manifest itself too much in one office. But as soon as you go to a second office, that's 3 miles away or 5 miles or 10 miles away, then if you can't delegate, it really punishes you. And so on an individual level, there, I would say half the people that tried to expand, and almost everyone wanted more than one office. So about half the people that wanted to expand or tried to expand shrank that back down to one office because they just couldn't delegate.
It's different about starting a franchise now versus when you started one. You know, you started your first one. I'm sure there's obviously the technology differences, but what else is different about starting one now?
Yeah, it's actually, there's a real danger in people looking at franchising now because it's become such a hot commodity. And every mom and pop that has a business of any kind, that they have one location. It could be a restaurant. I mean, it could be any kind of industry. And their friends say to them, wow, you need to franchise this. This is wonderful. the food is wonderful, or the service is wonderful, or your business is wonderful. You need to franchise this. So what's happened over the last 30 years is there's been way too many franchises. In the International Franchise Association, there are 4,000 franchisors. To be in the top 50% of all those 2,000, you only need 20 locations. And that means you're failing. I mean, I took Jackson Hewitt to 6,000. I took Liberty Tax to 4,000 offices. And of course, the best, like McDonald's and Subways, and have tens of thousands of locations. What's happened today is every time Dick and Harry thinks they can do it, and most of them fail. There have been over 3,000 franchisors fail in the 21st century.
Well, and what's like the biggest, I guess, not mistake or challenge, or why are so many of them failing?
Yeah, it comes down to, this is going to sound really simplistic and obvious, and it kind of amazes me that they all make the same mistake. But what happens is you get a mom and pop, and they have a great system, and in one location, it could have been the McDonald's brothers that Ray Kroc bought their store, right? They're great operators, but all of their income comes from this one location. So when they start franchising, they still need that income. So they're doing two things. They're running their location and they're franchising, and they're not good at franchising. The key simple element is just happy, successful franchisees. Three words: happy, successful franchisees. So the franchisors, without ever having been in the industry before, without having thought it through, without good coaching and mentoring and proper. I mean, they get coaching and mentoring, but it's not typically quality coaching and mentoring. They build an agreement that protects them. And if you don't have happy, successful franchisees, you're never going to grow. If you have happy, successful franchisees, you can't stop growing. The companies that fail, the franchisors that fail, they have agreement that is one-sided, where the franchisor makes all the money. And it has to be a system where you as a franchisee, if you as a franchisee don't make money and I don't make money, it doesn't work. So they're either selfish or uninformed or inexperienced, and they do not commit to happy, successful franchisees. And it should be obvious to everyone that that's the formula.
So let's shift and talk a little bit about someone coming in and maybe they're not a business owner, but they're interested in franchising and they want to buy or acquire their first franchise. What's the typical profile of that person that you see be successful over time? What kind of traits, skills do they need to be able to get started in franchising? And then what's the path have to be like for them over the first, like, you know, let's say 5 years for them? Do they need five franchises? Do they need 10? How do they grow over time to be successful?
Yeah, the last question is easy, and that is different people have different amounts of money they need to make. Some people, believe it or not, are happy making $50,000. Some people aren't happy unless they're making, even if they made $50 million. So it's the appetite for success is different in every person. But you're right, the two-thirds of Americans want to be self-employed. And come to find out that two-thirds of them shouldn't be self-employed. They're not a risk taker. They are not a system follower. They're not a self-starter. They're not a delegator. They're just not meant to be franchises. So I've had 10% of my franchises fell out just because they weren't meant to be self-employed. The good thing that I know is that in my systems, the startup cost is so low, it's not typically not life-changing when you make that mistake. But we try to analyze them and work with them and encourage them to come and work in our offices. But people don't realize that no one gets to skate. Everyone's going to face adversity. Bad stuff is going to happen. And when tough stuff happens to the wrong people, the people that shouldn't be self-employed, they just get bowled over and destroy emotionally. So you have to have the right mental resolve. There's no one telling you to get up every morning and be to work at 9 a.m. And there's no one telling you that sometimes you're not going to have 2 cents in your bank account and you got to pay your employees. You have to be tough. And my favorite, you know, the favorite 10 two-letter words, if it is to be, it is up to me. And it's up as a franchisee, it's up to you.
Does the franchisee have to like or have a passion for the particular business that their franchise is in? Or do you see kind of, there's more that goes into what, like more, I guess, kind of specifics or traits about the franchise that is even more important than what the specific business is?
Yeah, I'm not sure that's an absolute requirement, but boy, it certainly makes it more fun. And in our mission statement, I love our mission statement, and it's having fun, improving lives. And my philosophy is, thank God it's Monday, not thank God it's Friday. Thank God it's Monday. If you're not going, if on the way to work on Monday morning, you're not looking forward to it, you're going to the wrong place. Life is too short. So when we take people, when you bring in new franchisees, you don't sell them. Right? You shouldn't be selling someone. You should be identifying the right person for our model. And so the first thing we do is, and you've already alluded to it, is this person meant to be self-employed? And we look at things like, were they ever self-employed before? Does it run in the family? And then the next thing is, what industry should it be in? And then the third thing is, should what company, what vehicle, once they decide the industry, what vehicle? Should they go do it themselves? Should they join another franchise system? Should they join our franchise system? So we take each prospect through those steps to ensure that we find the right people, because life's too short. And when a franchisee fails, they can only blame two people, themselves or me. And they guess who they always blame first? So I've got a lot of criticism. But at the other hand, almost no lawsuits, because people realize at the end of the day that it was their fault. They, you know, the toughest thing, Mark, is my job is to create a great system for you. And I've been doing that at several companies for 55. Now I'm in my 55th season. I've always had the best system. My company has always been the fastest growing in the industry. Whether I was with Block or Jackson Hewitt or Liberty or ATEX, we're always fastest growing. So I do my job. Your job is to follow the system. And again, you would think that's so obvious. Half the people that joined us never were in the industry one day, not even 54 minutes. And I would completed 54 years. And you would think it'd be automatic to listen to John Hewitt. But not one person ever has. Zippity-doo-dah, nobody listens. It's the hardest thing to do. Human beings are just not good listeners.
You mentioned startup costs earlier, and I've seen startup costs on franchises in a wide range from, you know, $10,000 to $1 million. Why such a wide scale? And is the higher startup cost, is that any indicator of success for the franchise?
No, there's no price. The cost doesn't indicate the likelihood of success, because the high costs are typically in buildings and build out. And so the biggest high cost items are the big franchise, like a McDonald's or a Burger King, or those are very, very expensive, that build out. And the fact that they're a good system is the key. Do they have a good system, and are you going to listen? Not how much money you're spending on real estate.
How does someone, let's say it's a medium range startup cost, how does someone, or what are the financing options that someone has if they don't have the cash available, or do they need to have the cash available to start?
So there's so many options. You know, back before the Great Recession in 2008 and 2009, most people came in and they took equity out of their home. And that was how they started up. Because even at our low startup costs, which typically are about $60,000 or $70,000. Not many people can write a check for $60,000 or $70,000. You got to go get it somewhere. And so most people in the old days used to take it out of the equity in the house. And then for many, many years, with housing decline and tough to get mortgages and second mortgages, it totally switched. And now it's a good tax shelter to use your 401k or your IRA to fund your business. Now, in addition to that, we have relationships with banks and fund, different funding sources. The SBA is a big funder of franchising. The Small Business Administration. So we, as part of our service to our existing and potential franchisees, we have relationships that we give them with our franchisees.
Have you seen a shift to, I guess, franchises that open in, or operate in a virtual world, or is there still mostly physical locations that, when people start one up?
No, there aren't many that operate in a virtual world. It's not, if you're not required to meet a customer face-to-face, it's very hard to franchise it. I mean, for example, if you can do it virtually, what difference does it make where you are? If I'm in Virginia Beach, I can serve people in Alaska and Hawaii and Canada and London, all right? So if you can do it virtually, then it's unlikely to be a franchisable concept.
Maybe you can talk a little bit about loyalty brands and the different types of franchises that you have available through that platform.
Yeah, Loyalty Brands has 8 different brands. And I've already mentioned our premier ATAX tax division, which is already, we're ranked 3rd behind H&R Block and Jackson Hewitt. We've already passed Liberty, and it's the fastest growing in the industry. So I'm always going to be a tax guy. This is my 55th tax season. But boy, have I fallen in love with pets and pet services. It's amazing that what the pet industry is, and especially even COVID enhanced that, right? More than 10% more people obtained pets during COVID. And so pet industry is growing by double digits. And I've been in an industry that's, I'll call it plotting, that grows 1% a year. But the pet industry, everything pets, whether it's dog walking, pet sitting, food delivery, poop picker-upper, insurance, but our mobile grooming is just growing by leaps and bounds. That will be our fastest growing brand for a long time. And it's, when I was with Jackson Hewitt in 12 years, we got to 800 locations. And when I was with Liberty in 12 years, we got to 4,000 locations. But I think we'll be at 4,000 vans within about 7 years at Zoom and Grooming. So that's really exciting me. And we're looking at other ways to monetize that because we do cross-marketing. So for example, in our biggest mobile grooming franchise, he has about 5,000 customers who have used the grooming service, and all 5,000 need a tax return. And in our biggest office, tax office, we do 7,000 tax returns, and 60% of them have pets or dogs, and 60% of them need grooming. So that's over 3,000 pets that need grooming, and out of the 7,000 tax returns. So that gives us an advantage over other companies. We also have a roofing siding company. We have Loyalty Business Brokers, which is buying and selling businesses instead of buying and selling houses. So that's a fun job. Most people that are attracted to that just love that, wheeling and dealing and buying and selling businesses. We have Inspection Services, Inspection Boys, a staffing company that it's called Johnson Staffing. So we have a handful of franchises that are exciting. And the one feel-good franchise is called Little Medical School. And I love it because you take these 4 to 14-year-olds and you go into after-school programs or summer school programs, and you give them a lab coat and you give them a stethoscope and you teach them medicine. And I think just in seeing the classes and seeing the results, I think there's going to be more people in our country that go into medicine just from taking our classes at Little Medical School.
That's pretty cool. Do you ever see someone, starting, they get their first franchise, and let's say they just as an example, they come up to acquire or start, they have 10 franchise locations. in let's just say the mobile grooming. And they get to the point where they say, okay, this is great, but now I like the franchise concept, but mm-hmm. instead of getting to 20 franchises or 50 franchises, they say, I want to start a second franchise and the roofing. Or is it best for them to kind of focus on one specific business?
Let me say, I've been seeing franchises since 1969, so for 55 years. So, and I brought in 5,200 of my own and seen thousands more at H&R Block, right? And I've watched them over the years diversify into outside, into different businesses. And I think what happens, Mark, is that there's only X number of locations you can have in a city. So if you're in Rochester, New York, and there's only 22 offices, you have a choice. I have these 22 offices. It runs like clockwork. I have great people that have been with me for a decade or more. And I can either go to Syracuse or Buffalo and open more offices, but they're already taken, probably. Or I can go look at another industry and put my toe in the water with another industry. So I would say that at least 20 to 25% of the franchises I've seen over the years have explored other industries. Certainly when they sell their business, when they sell, and everyone's going to sell sooner or later. And especially in the 21st century, when I was in the last century, you just kept your business for life. But in the 21st century, you'll build something and then sell it and buy something else and then sell that and buy something else and sell that. So I see a lot more transitioning today than I did 55 years ago when I started. But yeah, that's very common. And it's mostly a geographic situation where I get bound by the fact that the organization, the Jackson Hewitt or the Liberty or the ATEX have grown so big that there's no more territories near me. And so I'd have to expand from Virginia Beach to South Dakota if I want to open more offices. So instead of that, they'll start a second franchise system.
Makes sense. Well, John, that concludes all the questions I have for you today. I want to thank you for joining me. I found our discussion about franchising fascinating. Before we go, how can listeners find more about you and more about Loyalty Brands?
Yeah, we're at loyaltybrands.com. And if they want a free copy of my book, it's John at J-O-H-N at loyaltybrands.com. And I'll be happy to send them my book that talks about my journey.
Great. We'll link to that, both of those, in the resources section of the show notes. Thanks again, John. And thank you to everyone who tuned in today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Mark. Great job.
Don't forget to follow the Agent of Wealth on the platform you listen from and leave us a review of the show. We're currently accepting new clients, and if you'd like to schedule a one-on-one consultation with our advisors, please do so at boutisfinancial.com/call.
Thank you for listening to the Agent of Wealth podcast. Click the subscribe button below to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered represents the views and opinions of the guests and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Boutis Financial. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only and is not intended to be a substitute for professional financial planning and investment advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service provider with any questions you may have regarding your investments and financial planning.